Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you'll need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
It's time for the Wrestling Perspective Podcast. That sleepy big bear of a fella is Dimitri Young from Major League
Baseball. What's up, people?
Wrestling nerd like I am, Dennis Farrell. Dimitri, it's been a few weeks now. Draft is over. Backlash has happened. You have Kevin Nash running down everybody that doesn't look like he's a steroid-outed wrestler from the 90s. Where do we even begin? Because, like, I'm angry at this whole Kevin Nash thing. I want to talk about Backlash. I want to go over the draft. What do you want to talk about?
The thing I am least familiar with, the whole Kevin Nash saga.
So, basically, in a nutshell, Kevin's on this podcast, and he's basically like running down Will Ospreay. I mean, just from every direction. The guy's not drawing a dime. This is how we used to do it. He doesn't look like a world champion. This is what we used to look like, and this is what WWE wrestlers look like, and AEW guys look like. Indie stars and WWF guys or WWE guys look like millions. You can tell who pays the guy, right? And don't get me wrong. I might have the same opinion if someone was writing me a check too. But my issue is with this whole Kevin Nash thing is wrestling's changed, right? All those guys that look like $1 million in the 90s, most of them are dead now because of the steroids. The guys that I watch now, whether it's some of the, listen, not all those WWE guys look like studs right away. For the longest time, AJ Styles, he looked good, but he wasn't cut until he came back. A lot of those guys don't, they come back from an injury or a hiatus cut. So I look at those comments and I think to myself, it's not the same anymore in the wrestling industry. I can believe now that a 5'9" or a 5'11" guy can be a world's champion based on the skill set he brings. He doesn't need to be the biggest, most buffest guy in wrestling for me to have to believe he's a world champion.
No, I mean, you're exactly right. You know, times have changed, just like in all sports. You know, the importance of being able to show up, be healthy, and be able to perform. And, you know, the whole thing with the whole indie scene, those guys aren't gargantuans. A lot of those guys do the flippity-doo-dah stuff, which I don't mind seeing. I'm not opposed to anything like that. So, I mean, you're going to have guys that look like regular people versus everybody looking larger than life and a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Kevin Nash, you look at him, he's 6'10" or whatever. He's a freak. So I know where he's coming from, but at the same time, you know, it is what it is. And instead of being a disgruntled person, it sounds like old baseball players talking about how today's game is. And that's the biggest comparison that I can make with that. And I mean, Kevin Nash does have a point, but at the same time,
It's almost, you know what? It's kind of like Jim Cornette. I love Jim Cornette. I'm not a massive fan of his podcast, but I love Jim Cornette, the on-screen character. I feel like a lot of times when these old heads, which I'll call them old heads, not, you know, as a rundown here, but these old heads, when they try to compare the current wrestling landscape, the current indies, TV, to what we grew up watching, it just, you can't do that. You look back at some of the stuff with rose colored glasses. The culture's different. You know, they're not drinking and driving. I mean, anytime you hear the stories, they're outward bragging about being, you know, so drunk and ruining rental cars and the drug use and the womanizing. And cool, great era to live in. But these new guys now, they play the video games. They don't so much go out drinking and get into the trouble. But even on screen, the way stories are told, it's different. I feel like we were spoiled where we had year plus long storylines that we got to see develop over time and flourish. Now, you know, you have, and I think it changes from time to time, but 3 months tops to tell a story now. And it's basically fast food wrestling. You hit it, you move on. You hit it, you move on. You don't really go back and revisit it. WWE is kind of doing a little bit of that. And you know, I think AEW is adapting a little bit and trying to find, you know, their storyline, to which we'll jump in a second. But I hate hearing these old guys run down this new product, because this isn't, what do they always say? This isn't how wrestling is done. This isn't how you tell a story. Like, it is now.
Yeah. I mean, it's the evolution. I mean, think times change, people change, you know, society changes, and they're catering to today's society versus back in the day where guys would go out drinking all night and popping pills and stuff. I mean, they have a wellness thing going with WWE and AEW. They look out for the mental health. Mental health didn't exist back then. You know, it was like, oh, I got a concussion. What do? They'll pop some pills and drink some alcohol and go chase tail. Like, those guys don't exist anymore. And I'm pretty sure Michael P.S. Hayes has cleaned it up himself being a producer now. I don't think he's out there doing the stuff that he did with the Fabulous Freebirds back in the 80s and stuff. So times have changed, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it. People would be out of business if that was the case. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be lawsuits out, the yin-yang, multiple DUIs. You know, just drastic things would happen, so... As far as them cleaning it up and catering to today, I think they did a good job, because that's what we're living in today. If we do what we did back then, we'll be considered outlaws.
And, you know, I actually had a conversation today with one of my buddies about, you know, this product and current product and what we grew up watching. And, you know, he basically asked me, you know, why the Intercontinental Championship isn't the number one contending belt anymore. And, you know, it took me a second to think about this, but in reality, you can't do that, right? I mean, I think you could have pulled it off back in the 80s and 90s to a point when you really only had to do a storyline once a year. So you could protect the Intercontinental Championship at that time. Now, every 3 months, that you can't have the Intercontinental Champion trying for that belt every 3 months and then losing it, and then it becomes vacant. It becomes so wishy-washy. It has to be its own separate belt now.
No, it has to be, you know, and I think that's the good thing about it, is you have different layers. You have the upper mid card that goes after the world. You have the mid card that goes after, and it's a workhorse belt. It still is a workhorse belt. It's still revered. I still don't like the design of the belt. It hasn't grown on me. Hopefully they'll go back to the Cody Rhodes white belt that looked like the Ultimate Warriors. Back in the day, I liked that one. But those mid-card titles, there's an importance because there's more wrestlers. There's a lot more wrestlers. And so when you have that many wrestlers, you have five or six that are going in that upper mid-card, and then you have 12 to 15 that are in the mid-card. And because you have two separate belts, two different shows, you have the U.S. belt that would be the equivalent to the U.S., I mean, the Intercontinental belt. So it's all about working with what you have.
Is there one belt from maybe the 80s or 90s that is not in circulation right now that you'd like to see brought back?
Oh, yes. The television belt.
Yes, that was my answer. Oh, my gosh. I WWE needs to bring back the television champion.
Yeah, they need to have one. I don't think they ever had one.
No. Bring it back from WCW. But, yeah, I mean, I think I would – I don't think I'd sacrifice the U.S. champion or the United States champion, whatever they want to brand it. I don't think I'd sacrifice it, but I think you could turn something into a, U.S. belt or not U.S., but the TV champion and just have it the first two matches of every show. Just, the way WCW had it.
How about how NWA does it?
All right.
I do like the time limit. And what is it like? What is it like 7 minutes and 5 seconds or something like that based on the start time of old WCW, NWA when it came on WTBS?
7:05.
05 start. Yeah. I love that. But, I mean, that belt was also cool looking. That Arn Anderson wearing that belt. I always thought it was a good looking belt.
Yes.
And then you have the right people defending it. That ups the value of the belt.
And we'll transition here because I do want to talk about Jake Paul and Cody Rhodes here in a second getting into this belt talk.
You mean Logan?
Logan. One of the Pauls. How's that? I mean, one of them's fighting Tyson.
Peter Paul and
one
Mary?
Fighting Cody. Either way. I really think if you were going to do a belt like that, Logan would be the television champion I would want to see. Here's a guy, and I think we've talked about him a lot in past episodes of who he's really sold you in, and at least me, into believing that this guy's a legitimate wrestler, that whatever spot they put him in, main event right now, he deserves it. He's earned it. I remember in the early days thinking this guy was a toolbox with his YouTube channel stuff and his dumb antics. And, I'm way older. So I that kind of stuff was not appealing to me when I was, getting into, I guess, cannibalizing media on my phone. So I grew up not liking, I don't want to say grow up because it was only 10, 15 years ago, but I came into that era thinking that this guy was a complete joke, a complete tool. And here I am now in 2004 going, he might be one of my favorite wrestlers. Like he's one of those guys. And I don't want to heap too much praise on him, but he's turned his image on in social media, wrestling, everything totally around where I'm like, I'm all in on this guy.
You know what? I'm not too far off. When you had Bad Bunny come in, you had Logan Paul come in, you had these celebrities come in, and we had them in the past. It's no different. But what we're seeing, especially with Logan Paul, he's putting in the work. We can't deny that at all. He's putting in the work. His mic skills are tremendous. His athleticism is through the roof. He has a following. He's representing the celebrities like how I think a celebrity would really want to do this if they're getting in professional wrestling. They don't look like Karl Malone when he was out there doing it. Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman did try, but it's like, eh. And I did like Lawrence Taylor when him and Bam Bam Bigelow went at back in the day in WrestleMania. But what Logan Paul is doing, he's bringing eyeballs to the channel. And in turn, Triple H has turned him into a megastar.
Now, do you think it's too early now for belt versus belt? Because this essentially what I've just, you know, learned is it's Logan versus Cody, belt versus belt. I don't know, maybe at this next upcoming pay-per-view. I'm interested. I want to see this. I want to see Logan do something great. I don't want to see them, you know, combine the belts or get rid of one of the belts. They're starting to do a good job of really, you know, stop hotshotting belts. Logan as the U.S. champion right now is a great fit. I feel like if Logan took a clean loss here, it wouldn't hurt him at all. I'd still like to see him be a champion, but I don't know where this story is going right at this point.
Well, I was thinking about that as well. And the first thing that popped up was that kind of finish. What is it? Dusty finish.
Okay.
So thinking that both are still going to hold on to the belt, it's going to be some stupid disqualification or something like that. And at the very worst, Cody has two belts and does what most people do, vacate it. And then they have a tournament, which end. And Money in the Bank, we'll just say that, and they'll become a new U.S. champion, and Logan Paul will win it again and become a two-timer. I don't know. I'm just thinking like a writer right now.
Are you happy at this point? Because, look, let's be honest, and I think we said this around WrestleMania, right? If Cody wins the championship, they've not done a good job of building up a legitimate challenger for him, right? As much as I like the Usos are upper mid-carders at best. They're not legitimate contenders for a world heavyweight champion. I'm sorry, people out there, if you love the Usos. I just don't view them as championship material just yet, at least singles-wise. I think you have to keep Cody away from the bloodline. Why, whatever they're doing, you know, kind of settles out and shakes out. I think Logan Paul is the biggest name out there. I mean, you could always throw a Randy Orton, you know, taking out whatever shows they're all on, who could help build up a Cody Rhodes or a Kevin Owens. But we've seen Kevin Owens now challenge for a championship every, 6 months and fall short every time. I hate to see that happen to him again, but what are your views?
There aren't really many contenders. I'm with you on that. And this was what we were talking about. If Cody wins the belt, if he finishes the story, what's next? Versus Cody lost and he's back trying to figure out a way to get back at Roman Reigns. And then we can actually see something materialize with the bloodline, with Roman being there. And then the other guys like Tama Tonga and Tama Loma coming in along with Solo Sikoa. And then you have that split right there, but Roman is there. The split is going to be obviously later, but it falls back on, you know, the decision they made to finish Cody's story.
I'm going to call this now. This is my way, way too early prediction for the next WrestleMania. You have Bloodline Civil War, Roman versus The Rock, right? Hopefully Roman's the heel. The Rock can be the babyface in this situation. Triple threat. Roman, Rock, Cody. That's my way too early prediction because I'm seeing this play out, and what I'm hoping we get is a civil war, right? Because you can't turn Roman a face. Roman has been the most dominant heel in wrestling in the last 20 years, right? I think we both can kind of agree with that. And for you to turn him face in the storyline versus The Rock, who has been doing some of his best heel work as well. I think you got to turn one of them face, or they both can be kind of heelish in this situation. But, you know, I would align The Rock with the Uso brothers, have them come together, The Rock, the Usos, and you throw one more family member in there versus Roman and Sequoia and whoever else you want to put in there. You have them both legit, like slaying claim to next contender for Cody. They both keep clashing. Turns out to be a triple threat. You have them both take each other out. Cody pins one of them, stays the champion. That's kind of my vision of what I'd like to see going
forward. I'm kind of curious about Jacob Fatu and when he's going to enter the scene. Because I watched him for years on MLW, and I mean, Jesus. I was really impressed with Jacob Fatu, and and he has one of those hardship stories, and to see him finally get his flowers and appear on WWE, and I've seen some of the podcasts and stuff talking about, will he take the shine away from Solo Sikoa when he gets there, because he does have a presence. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Jacob Fatu can do, and seeing how far that's gonna carry, and what effects will that make to what your prediction is, that Civil War plus Cody in WrestleMania 41. I think that if that happens, Jacob Fatu's gonna have something to do with the outcome.
Do you think Jacob would take some of the shine away from Solo?
I think so, because that dude, he scares me. And I know that this is wrestling and scripted, but I think off script, he'll fuck somebody up.
No, I agree. You know, I like where it's going now, where I guess they're, at least from what I'm seeing, and I may be reading the situation wrong, but, you know, Roman's out of the loop. Solo's calling the shots right now. Roman comes back. Maybe he likes it. Maybe he doesn't. You have Heyman, who's scared in the situation. Everything
he is.
I love it. I don't know how many times in the past we've talked about this, and we're just like, I think in the early days, maybe even before Sami Zayn became part of the Bloodline, we were like, all right, this Bloodline thing is dead. Let's move on from it. Sami breathes new life into it. And then from there, it just keeps like spreading these branches out where I don't want it to end. I really don't.
I don't think it will.
I would put this up here, at NWO levels. At the storytelling that they're doing right now, that this might be some of the best long-term wrestling stuff we've seen in forever. And I don't want it to end, because it's just every turn is something new. And a civil war. Like, sure, we've seen the NWO split from Black and Right to the Wolf Pack, but this just seems different.
That's because it is. We hadn't seen this before in WWE. We heard about Bullet Club splitting up in New Japan, but how many people are watching New Japan? I'm not. I don't have a channel, you know. And of course, the whole NWO thing, and had they had better writers and not everybody trying to be the chef in the kitchen, you know, that could have saved WCW, if you ask me, as opposed to it being owned by WWE now.
So let me ask you, Dimitri. They come to you and say, Young, we want your ideas of what we could do next for this Bloodline storyline. What do you pitch them?
What would I pitch them?
Yeah, what would, if WWE came to you and said, hey, what would you do next with this Bloodline? What would you do?
With the current Bloodline,
with the Gorillas of Destiny. Yep.
With the Gorillas of Destiny and with Solo Sikoa, they need belts.
Okay.
They need belts. I would have them chase down some belts and get the tag team belts and get the US belt.
Here, You just said something that made me think for a second, right? Now, we sit here and assume that the Civil War storyline, which we all assume is coming, right? We're just guessing, is going to be Rock and Roman. But what if it's not? What if it isn't The Rock versus Roman? What if it's Roman versus Sokoa? Like,
it could be.
Think about this right now. Sokoa is setting himself up to be the leader of the bloodline right now. And here's what you had to say triggered this thought. If the bloodline went out and got some belts, and then let's say Roman comes back and Solo's like, whoa, 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 we're way more successful now than when you were in charge. We have gold. You didn't. This could be great.
Maybe we should tag team on this writing stuff right here.
It was your idea. I just opened it up. You're the one that had it. I just was like, dude.
But isn't that how most factions are, you know, how they are, what's the word I'm looking for? How they are ranked based on, you know, the belts that they had. Look at Judgment Day. At one point they had the tag team belts, the woman's belt. They had all of it. And they're revered because they win championships. And so that'll be the same thing with the bloodline. Get those men some belts.
Mm-hmm. I'd almost like to see some of this whole bloodline thing maybe even spill a little bit into NXT too, where it feels multi-leveled.
Well, I mean, so Sokoa had the North American belt for a brief moment. So he, you know, when he first came up, and that was when they had all the belts, the tag team belts, mm-hmm. the Usos, and then he had the North American belt, and Roman was the undisputed, you know, heavyweight champion. So it always looks good when you have a strong faction that's holding titles and being braggadocious about it. So for me, those guys get some belts, and I'm talking fairly soon. I think that A-Town Down Under, and I got once the Guerrillas of Destiny, or whatever they're going to be called here in WWE, once they get into a feud with them, I don't see them. I don't see A-Town Down Under holding those belts much longer.
But and let's be honest, right? Them and Miz and R-Truth, they're not destined to hold tag team championship belts for long. I mean, they're a cute act right now, but I feel like they're just placeholders until they can get something going. So to see the bloodline could easily be one of two sets of tag team champions. And Sami Zayn, I like Sami, but Sami as the Intercontinental Champion doesn't excite me at all. I could see almost any member right now of the bloodline take Sami out and win that championship. I mean, it is very achievable what you're suggesting.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go down that road. I mean, it adds for excitement because whenever you throw a title into anything, it just hypens it up. And I know you hear, you don't need a title for this. And it's like, yes, you do. You know, those people that say that are people that can't win a championship.
Or got screwed. I mean, you look back in the 90s, and I know we've talked about this many times, you know, Roddy Piper should have been world champion. Million Dollar Man should have been a legitimate world champion. And when I hear like a Bruce Pritchard on this podcast be like, those guys didn't need championships. No, but you know what? You could have celebrated what they were doing by giving them a championship. When I hear someone like, you know, part of the business back in the day go, well, those guys were so big or so good, they didn't need a championship. I feel like that was a cop-out, and that was their way of justifying missing an amazing opportunity. Could you imagine a Mr. Perfect world championship, a world title run? It would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, him and Ric Flair feuding with each other.
But
that would have been a perfect opportunity right there because he already was a two-time Intercontinental Champion, not to mention before he came to WWF, he was the AWA World Heavyweight Champion. And then he didn't get it in WCW either. That one baffled me too.
Right.
It must be that Hulk Hogan politics.
I never got that. Of course, look, we look back on it with 2020, 40/40 vision. You know, we can see now what they couldn't see then. And I don't know if it was one of those things where it's like, oh, we'll give it to him eventually. We'll give it to him. And eventually just never comes. But I feel like a lot of those guys are robbed. And I don't want to see it with some of these guys I like when and instead we get a 6 month R-Truth, you know, Miz tag team championship run for no reason.
No, I don't think they're going to have it that long either. You know, I think it was cool that they wanted R-Truth got his true WrestleMania moment. Miz got another moment, and they did it together because I'm pretty sure they're good friends off the camera as well. But yeah, you know, they got to lose those belts soon.
I hope so.
And I would personally for Raw like to see the Creed brothers win it. I really like those guys.
There's so much good tag teams out there right now, and I think WWE has done a really good job of resurrecting that tag team division. And for the longest time, AEW I think had the best tag team division, and I really think right now WWE is giving them a run for their money.
I think WWE has better.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
They're better.
I just think they need to put belts on a couple young tag teams and let us see what they can do.
Exactly. I like to see DIY win it too. A big fan of Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, especially when they were down in NXT, they were just wrecking shop. Them, the Revival, AKA FTR, the Alpha Academy, and then even AOP, when they were down there, they was wrecking shop. And too bad that didn't resonate when they all got called up. I guess that Vince McMahon era, you know, turned them into ass clowns instead of them being, you know, credible tag teams like what Triple H is doing with them right now.
So let's, I guess, transition a little bit. I do want to touch on Backlash for a second. We both watched a great show. We all know what happened, so we're not going to really get into it, but holy cow. First and foremost, I say this every time that there's a foreign pay-per-view at an odd time. I love it. I it feels special. Take out the politics on, you know, Saudi Arabia and the blood money. That's above my pay grade. I don't understand any of that stuff. And I'm not going to pretend, and I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a preachy wrestling fan. But you know what? I love 1 p.m. wrestling. That when wrestling comes on at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, by the way, I get excited for that. Well, it wasn't Backlash, but what was the one in Australia? You know, for me, that was
like Elimination Chamber.
Elimination. That was like 4 a.m. You know, I'm sitting in my garage at 4 a.m. with a beer and a cigar. My next door neighbor comes over and we're sitting there watching this at 4 a.m. and loving every second of it. And then, you know, 6, 7 o'clock, I'm in bed sleeping in the morning. But you know what? It felt special. That France show, fucking awesome.
Ooh-wee. That crowd.
Right?
That was the best crowd ever. And that chant they had with AJ Styles, that was like crazy. I was like, you know, what in the world is this? And Corey Graves later on explained that the word phenomenal had something to do with the French culture, and then they just hit this song or whatever. And I was just like, I mean, they were into it from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't miss a beat. So they really did something where the U.S. crowd is going to have to step their game up.
Oh, we won't. Dude, listen, here's the thing. And I've learned this from like Chris Sabin and other wrestlers, right? In Japan, it's frowned upon to cheer and to yell. Like that, you know, it takes a lot of American wrestlers a lot of time to adapt to, like, by them being silent and watching, that's them giving you a compliment. Sometimes they'll clap or they get a little rowdy. I think that U.S. influence is kind of rubbing off on them. The American fans, I mean, we've actually, and not in a good way, evolved. The Attitude Era, the signs, I loved the signs during the Attitude Era. And then somehow it died off. You don't see many signs anymore. And now we get these wrestling fans that want to be bigger than the product, like the green shirt guy or this other guy. Like, you know what? It's cool that you get to sit in the front row for every show, but go fuck yourself. I don't give a fuck about the green shirt guy. You know, like, I'm sorry. I don't care about green shirt guy. I don't care about Vladimir the super fan. I don't like, so even wrestling podcasters who try to be bigger than the industry or in, I don't give a fuck about that shit. I like my product. And I think American fans, you know what? I'm going to say this and I'm going to put this on. I think American internet message board Twitter fans are the worst fucking people on earth. You guys think you have a fucking opinion that matters. You don't. You don't know how to book your way out of a plastic bag, but you think because you watch 50 hours of wrestling, you know what the fuck is going on. You don't. Your booking ideas are just trash. Occasionally you hit on a good idea. Congratulations. But your shitty little internet comments are the worst. Twitter wrestling fans make me not want to be on Twitter. That's my rant.
I'm not on Twitter, you know, because, you know, these guys are hiding behind a keyboard and stuff. And pretty sure most of them can't put up their dukes. You know, but they can cuss you out on that keyboard and stuff and talk about your mama and stuff. And it's like, stand behind your words. Actually, stand so someone can see you. And then let's see what you're going to say. You going to be Billy Badass or you going to run with your tail between your legs?
Yep. Oh, listen, I'll say this. And listen, wrestling fans out there, you think I'm sitting here cutting you down. I'm the same exact way. I have many friends in the wrestling industry, and I will send them a text with an idea. Do you know how many times I get a text back going, nah, that's a dog shit idea? I get it a lot, but you know what? It humbles me because sometimes we feel like because we know some of these guys, we listen to them talk or we learn a little bit about what they say to us, and then we feel like we can do it. We really can't. I can't book my way out of a plastic bag. I may throw ideas out like I did earlier with the Bloodline, but you know what? The one thing it's lacking is follow through. I can't tell you where to go after I just told you what to do. I don't know. I couldn't book a year of wrestling shit. I can tell you four or five decent ideas, I think, but you know what? I couldn't get you from point A to point B. I'm smart enough to know that.
Oh, yeah. And I'm the same way. It's just like talking about baseball with baseball players and then talking about it with a fan. And the fan, they miss the boat on a lot of things and they feel like they know what they're talking about. And then we'll shoot down those ideas that they're talking about. And I mean, it's the same with the wrestling industry. Those that are in the know, they know. Those that don't know will never know.
I will tell you this. I don't even think I've ever told you this story. Going into baseball, right? For a little bit, I like to say pretty good friends with Dan Duquette, right? Like him or hate him, he was a nice guy to me. Invites me out to Baltimore to sit and watch a game with him. And God, I wish I could remember the game, but it was like, you know, Chris Davis lets a ball get through him and, you know, there's a runner on first and me and my buddies in there. And he gets pissed and throws some papers. And my buddy's like, listen, it's not a big deal. It's just a man on first. He goes, to you, it's just a man on first. But now my pitcher has to throw 6 to 8 more pitchers. You know, there's an extra batter this inning. He now has to worry about this runner when if he tries to pick him off or, you know, that's a three or four more throws over there on his arm. And he's breaking it down to this like microscopic level of baseball that, you know, I love baseball. You know, I love baseball, but I would never have imagined going, holy cow, You like, you know, I know what a pitch count is, but now I'm applying it to like one guy's on first now. And then it's like, sure, that guy's on first, but now that's one extra batter per inning he's going to have to face that he didn't have to face earlier. And, you know, what happens, you know, if the next guy gets on, then that's two. And then it sets him back, you know, a third of an inning. It's like, my mind blew. Same way with wrestling.
No, you was explaining all that baseball stuff, and it was like, yep. Yeah, very, very familiar with that. It's like, especially if that error would have happened with two outs, how many extra pitches does he have to throw because of that? Maybe there's a wild pitch, that guy advanced to second, and then he tries to make a perfect pitch, base hit, run, scores, changes the complexion of the game. Not to mention now we got to get somebody up in the bullpen who, with that if that guy would have made that last out, let's say that guy extra 10 to 15 pitches possibly goes in for the next inning, as opposed to now we got to use our bullpen, and now that goes away from our grand plan for that day with that pitcher.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the domino effect, the bullpen, like that might have been a game you didn't even have to use two pitchers out of the bullpen. Now, you know, three pitches could mean two pitchers. It's that crazy. Like, it's crazy. And to think of it in wrestling terms, like, sure, you want to see these guys in this spot, but one may not be ready. One may be slightly injured. You just can't say that guy needs to be at the top. Wrestling fans, and I'm glad that we were talking about this, because I just think wrestling fans don't understand the business. Like, I was listening to Max Caster on a podcast. I don't know if you saw it, but
was it Chris Van Fleet?
Yes,
I was listening to that. That was a good interview.
And he said something once again that, you know, I've heard football players say, where, you know, he's like, sure, you guys want all these free agents to come to our show, but that takes away
Shelton Benjamin. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, and I think I know a lot about wrestling, but that was one of those moments where I go, I get it. Cause you ask a established NFL player, maybe even an MLB player, what they think of the NFL draft, they fucking hate it, because that's guys that are coming for their jobs. They're not happy for those rookies coming into the league. That's opportunities taken away from older veteran guys. I don't know if it's the same for baseball, because it seems like, you know, those guys are still 3 or 4 years away from hitting the major leagues. But do you guys view the draft the same way?
No, but we pay attention to the waiver wire, trades, releases, you know, the international market. So, yeah, there's things that we worry about as well. The draft, not so much. It's like, okay, we drafted a high school kid in the first round. There's 20 rounds. But there's always somebody breathing down your neck in the minor leagues or other teams. And it's very cutthroat. If you slip on a banana peel and your stats start to go south, they're going to be looking to wheel and deal and replace you. So from that aspect, it's like it's a dog eat dog world. It's all about survival. And when I finished my 13-year career, it was like, oh my God, I survived for 13 years.
You know, I didn't even finish my thought about the France crowd, because it came to a question for you. And so first of all, wrestling fans, I want to apologize if I came down harsh on you, because it wasn't meant to be. It's the internet keyboard warriors that I'm not a fan of. But anyways.
Why are you apologizing? There's no need to apologize for, hey, you voiced your opinion.
You're right. Fuck you guys.
Either way. Well, I mean, it wasn't pointed towards everybody. There's a certain certain group that you was pointing out. And yeah, F them.
Yep, great. All right, but back to the France crowd. And I heard someone say this, and I don't know if I viewed it the same way, but someone, and I wish I could remember where I heard it, but they were like, that France crowd, they hijacked the show. For you, do you feel like they hijacked the show? And what is hijacking a show from a fan? Like, I feel like CM Punk chants back in the day hijacking the show, especially if it's, you know, organization CM Punk wasn't part of. That to me is kind of hijacking the show, or when you start chanting boring during a match, which is totally disrespectful, and fuck right. whoever chants that during a wrestling match. I don't care if it is or is not boring. You just don't do it. Did you view that as hijacking, and what for to you would be hijacking a match?
No, that wasn't hijacking at all, you know, and what they did in France, I'm pretty sure they do that with their soccer and other sports that they do. They had that chant. They're allowed to chant. They're allowed to do what they want to do. Did they hijack the show? Absolutely not. What they did do was they made it a lot more exciting to watch because they were excited. They were excited for the matches, the people coming in, and they're seeing all these WWE superstars, and they're there for a major PLE, and they got to show the world how they do it in France. So that hijacking, no. Hijacking is exactly what you talked about, you know, the CM Punk chants when somebody's out there doing an interview or a match is going on, or they had a beach ball and doing that crap. Mm-hmm. You know, totally just trying to disrupt the show. They didn't disrupt the show in France, not at all. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that we're going to get some more of that possibly when they go to England or anywhere where they allow the crowd to be themselves.
Now, is that a thing in baseball? Can like, I know I always giggle when a ball player is like, the home team, you know, home fans should never boo the home team. Like, hey, I think, you know, if you play like dog crap, you deserve to get booed. But you as a baseball player, can fans hijack a game like that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they do the wave and stuff, but that has nothing to do with the on-field product.
No.
And, I mean, they can, you know, when I'm on the road and they boo the hell out of me, I relish in it. And it's like, oh, yeah, give me more. It's their energy. They're giving me their energy to the highest because that meant I whooped y'all's team's ass. That's why you booing the crap out of me. Versus now you talking about getting booed at home. That sucks. I had that happen. You know, I wasn't playing up the part, and that's their way of showing it. I mean, inside I'm going, fuck y'all. But you know, outwardly I can't show that. I gotta show that I'm still, you know, I'm yeah, you think I'm trying to suck right now? You think I'm showing up, I'm in the cage for hours and looking at video. To suck? I mean, come on, people. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, a lot of people, their lives ain't exactly two thumbs up. You know, they come to the game and they let out some of their frustration and stuff. And they're like, oh, this guy's getting paid millions of dollars. And yeah, if it was that simple, that's why there's a little more than 23,000 MLB players ever, and that includes the Negro League players, the Federal League, and the turn of the century players, the 1880s guys. So it's not like there's an abundance of people that are making it to the big leagues. This is not an easy climb, and it's even harder to stay.
Listen, and if so, it was that easy, we'd have been teammates.
I would have been a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I would have made a roster instead of, you know, sitting in the stands or playing the video game, which yeah. I'm a Hall of Famer on the video game. I don't want to brag.
Sounds like you are.
I guess let's wrap this up with a little bit of the draft. We both, for many episodes, talked about what we like to have seen, what we're probably going to see. Were you happy? Let's start with the production of the draft. Were you happy with that?
I kind of like that. They had different people come up and announce the draft for Raw and for SmackDown. And then when they picked somebody from NXT, they had the NXT roster all in a room and they're cheering for each other and whatnot. I thought that was a good touch. But if these guys are still going to continue to jump from Raw to SmackDown and stuff like that, it kind of takes away from the whole thing with a draft. Because if you're getting drafted, you're supposed to be at one place and one place only. And for them to do anything other than that, they need to have trades. They need to do it like sports.
I agree.
You know, let's have a trade, or this guy suspended, or we're gonna trade for him, or we're gonna release this guy from SmackDown storyline and Raw picks him up. You know, stuff in that nature where it revolves around actual sports that people actually watch and attend and wear their jerseys and stuff. They can do the same thing with professional wrestling.
With the whole MVP storyline back in the day, the highest, you know, richest free agent and all that stuff. I'd like to see that. You hit the nail right on the head. You know, maybe have them have no trade clause, or, you know, they have to approve a trade, and then you have negotiating contracts and stuff like that. There's so many great storylines you could have. And I do want to go over the first couple picks here of just, not so much as a recap, but let's play a game, right? Let's change the genders that were drafted. You know, you look back at the draft, Bianca Belair went first. So if we were to say a woman had to be drafted first, would it have been Belair for your opinion? Is there any other woman you think deserves to be drafted ahead of her?
I think she's the one. You know, she's a proven entity, former champion, athletic as God knows what. Future, she still has a tremendous future ahead of her. No, she is the perfect number one pick.
I agree. And with the two champions not being able to be drafted, I think Jade's still a little too green to have been put up into that number one overall spot. The next woman, I believe, drafted behind her was like Nia Jax, which I think that really helps build her brand up. I never not liked her. I just, you know, I know she has a bad rep of hurting people. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not going to pretend to know, you know, all the insights on that stuff. But I can tell you, if booked right, she could have been the most dominant women's wrestler we've seen. And maybe this helps her being drafted so high.
Yeah, I think that would too, you know. But they need to treat her like how TNA did with Awesome Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was just like unstoppable, and Nia Jax needs to be unstoppable. It's like they find her little weakness or whatever, and they just exploit it. It shouldn't be like that with a big dominant female like that. She had to have more of an Andre the Giant feel instead of the Big Show.
There were a few surprises. Carmelo Hayes being drafted number 3 overall ahead of Seth Rollins. I was a little shocked, but I also like that. I did like that move a lot. Like, I'm not mad at that. Although, would you have taken Bron Breakker ahead of Carmelo Hayes?
Ooh.
Mm. Man.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I would have gone either way. I mean, you got winners in both of them. You had a future with both of them. So it's like, do you like apples or do you like oranges? It's going to be your preference, but with those two, in my eyes.
I don't think you could have gone wrong either way. They're two different wrestlers. I think Carmelo on SmackDown could be one of those cornerstone wrestlers. He should have one of those secondary titles within the year. I honestly believe that. And, you know, the fact that Hayes went to SmackDown, Breakker went to Raw, I like that they're not competing young talent on the same brand for TV time.
No, exactly. I mean, they did their battles already in NXT. And so let those guys build themselves up on different brands. And as they rise up, and then the next draft comes, let's say 3 years from now, and both of them have become both mid-card title and world titles and build up their brand. So when they do clash, it's going to be something that they're going to go back to the archives. And remember in 2022 when Bron Breakker beat Carmelo Hayes for the NXT championship, and they'll go back and then they'll show how different they are now versus at that time. They're both going to put on more weight because, hey, they eat good in the big leagues. And number two, they're going to get more experience. The more experience they get, the better off they're going to be.
Here's my worry. And this, and I know we got to wrap this up, but looking at the first round, and if you look at this roster, it screams WWE needs to get younger fast. If you look at this first round, right? Seth Rollins, what's he, 36, 37 years old? Yeah. Randy Orton's in his 40s. You have LA Knight, who I believe LA Knight is what, 41? Like 43.
Yeah. 42 or 43, somewhere in there.
Yep. He's not a young gentleman. You had Ricochet. He's what, 36, 37? Sheamus is almost 50. AJ Styles is in his 40s. This is a old roster, if you really think about this. Like, I'm a little worried that they're not doing a good job of it. Maybe Carmelo and Breakker coming up, and I really think they need to start bringing some of these younger guys up and putting them into more prominent roles, because I'm a little worried that this roster could get old fast.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to give those guys a couple of years. And I mean, those next couple of years, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be exiting WWE. And what they're doing down in NXT is tremendous. They got a lot of young studs that are a year or two away from being on the main roster. So I think they're going to continue to feed the machine the way that they are. But there's going to be a boom of the younger stars coming up because there's just too many good players, both male and female, on that NXT roster that's going to be the real future of WWE under the Paul Levesque era.
Well, I mean, Kevin Owens is 40. CM Punk is, what, 45? Braun Strowman is 40. I mean, you Drew McIntyre, not a young buck anymore. He's 38. I'm looking at ages, yeah. So I'm not even going to pretend that I know this off the top of my head, guys. Shinsuke Nakamura, 44 years old. I'm gonna kind of keep going, but I think we're getting down to the end. Kofi Kingston is 42 years old. It's Finn Balor is what, 42 years old. These are not, I know wrestling's different from, you know, traditional sports, and in the past that they made us believe 50 and 60 year olds could win championships from, you know, 32 year olds, but guys.
Yeah, right. Goldberg. Yeah. That was a joke. And that ruined that him taking that belt from first Kevin Owens and then from The Fiend. That was two thumbs down big time on that.
But once again, I mean, if you really look at the ages of these WWE rosters, I'm going to try to put this in a way that makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about, right? But from the Attitude Era, what was it? The Ruthless Aggression and the PG Era, I think they're all the same. A lot of that was changing of the guard. You know, guys in Attitude Era retired. Then these new guys come in and they're taking those spots. And I don't know if they did a good job of cycling them in and out to make it seamless. But I worry that, you know, as we're in the Triple H era, WWE may be too slow to transition from some of these older guys into some of these younger guys. And then maybe we get that hard bump in the change in the errors like we did in the PG and Attitude. Does that make sense?
No, I know what you're talking about. And I mean, that remains to be seen, you know, because like I keep bringing up NXT and truth be told, AEW. Look how Jade Cargill came over. You know, Cody Rhodes, and I think they're going to be a lot more when their contracts are up in AEW. They're going to cross over to WWE. They've been talking about Hook, doggone Taz's son, perhaps coming over. And Brian Pillman Jr., he's killing it in NXT as Lexus King. And these guys are young and vibrant, and they bring new life to the whole wrestling industry. So I'm paying attention to all the younger people that are in different, you know, organizations and stuff. And Alex Hammerstone is 33.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I
know you're a Hammerstone guy. So, yeah, absolutely. Is there anything we missed this week? Because we're now at an hour, and I really intended to only do like 40, 45 minutes. But is there anything we missed this week that you wanted to bring up?
Oh, how the Mogul Embassy turned on the world champion, Swerve Strickland.
Okay.
AEW, yeah, they turned on him, and because he's facing Christian in the next pay-per-view, and Christian has something going on with the Elite, and I like what they're doing with Jack Perry as well. He finally has someone put the defibrillator to him and gave that young man some life. You know, his promos are a lot better, has a lot better energy, and that little bad boy thing that he has going on. Yeah, that's what I'm digging AEW right now. Of course, I'm digging WWE. I'm just digging wrestling as a whole.
I got to tell you, I think that was the best thing for Swerve. I like Swerve. Swerve's a nice, great guy. But I think Swerve is a guy I don't want to see lead a stable. He's filtered some people into this mogul empire that he's trying to build. And for me, it felt kind of flat. I think we both said many times, Swerve is a born star. He doesn't need a stable. And for him to break away as a champion, whether they turned on him or whatever, the fact that he's going to kind of be the lone wolf, I'm more excited for him now than I was when he had those guys around him.
Yeah, I didn't like those guys. But I do like Prince Nana, though. I do like him. So if he keeps him just for the, you know, the dance and stuff, I love that. And I like his act as well. But as far as the rest of the guys, I thought that was dead weight.
And you know what? I oddly enough said this today to my buddy too. Wardlow, Brian Cage, tag team. Give them the belts. Have them just destroy whoever the tag team champions are in 2 minutes, and you can rehab both of those guys' images right away. Let them be the newest Twin Towers or whatever dominant tag team you want to compare them to, but put those two together as a tag team and just have them wreck people.
That would be the Steiners.
Yes, I think that's how you save both those guys, because I feel like both those guys are doing nothing. You've done nothing to help them. You put them together. You put them in a match versus who's the tag team champions right now in AEW?
The Young Fucks.
Yeah. You have them come out and just destroy them in 3 minutes. You have bona fide superstars. Let them have the belts for 8 months, 9 months. Then you can have them go their own ways. They're legitimate championship contenders right off the bat. That's how you fix those two.
Yeah, because that's the one thing that AEW keeps slipping on, that banana peel. They don't hype up the Giants. You know, Lance Archer, I mean, Jesus Christ, come on. That dude should be killing everybody.
You know what? Take Brian Cage out. Put Lance and Wardlow together in a tag team and have them win those belts, and nobody can defeat them. Once again, you fix both of them. We as wrestling fans, I'm going to tell people a secret, at least us older guys, right? I think we grew up, and you're a little bit older than me, we grew up on the era of dominant tag teams. You know, the Road Warriors, the Steiners, the Four Horsemen, the
Doom.
Doom.
Oh, Harlem Heat.
Yes. We grew up on dominant tag teams. And this era, their talented tag teams is different from dominant tag teams. FTR, amazing tag team. Dominant? No. Young Bucks, amazing tag team. Dominant? No. I do not see one dominant tag team in WWE or AEW. They're just not there. There's no tag team that comes back from that curtain and you go, oh shit, that's a bad idea. There's just no tag team out there that makes you go, fuck, someone's about to get beat. And you put Warlow or Brian Cage or Warlow and, you know, the Hawk together. No tag
team. That's funny that you say that, because as you were talking about the dominant tag teams, I'm just thinking of WCW, you know, on Saturday night, and you hear the Road Warrior, brown. They come in, they take off those spiked shoulder pads, and the music's still playing. They put them in the Doomsday device. 1, 2, 3, and they don't even get, brown. I am. And then the Steiners come in, the Frankensteiner. And
yeah. Can you today in wrestling one dominant tag team? Not one great one, not one solid tag team, one dominant tag team.
I'll be able to answer that on the next show.
Okay, you know what? I like that. That's how we're going to end this show. I'm glad you brought that topic. I like how we spin off. All right, guys. Anything to promote?
No, nothing to promote this week.
All right. Well, maybe next week. Wrestling Perspective. Like, follow. Go to Fightful. That's where we are. Watch us there. You can watch us on our YouTube page. You know, do whatever you do with podcasts. We appreciate it. Thank you for all the emails. WrestlingPerspectivePodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to email us if you have any questions. I know I've said this. We have to do a Q&A. We have so much emails backed up I haven't even gotten to. And, you know, totally apologize to the Mortons. We were going to have Ricky and Carrie on last week, but somebody fucked up with their kid, so I totally apologize for that. That was my fault. The Mortons are, when they get back from Puerto Rico, they are coming back on to the podcast, so we're excited about that. So thank you guys so much for listening. I promise we'll have guests, but I just like talking wrestling. Here's the thing. I'm going to over-explain for a second. I love Lars. I love what Lars and I did, but we interviewed. I love what Dimitri and I do because we talk wrestling and it's so much more fun. So I'm having fun doing this right now and I want to pepper in some interviews, but still keep this dynamic going. But we'll get them. I promise, guys, we'll get your Q&As. Maybe even next week we'll do a Q&A podcast because I literally have like 300 emails I haven't even gotten to touch yet. So I promise we'll get through and get your emails. But thank you guys for listening. Dimitri, what a fucking great show, my friend.
Amen to that. That was a great time.
All right, guys. We'll see you again soon. Thank you. And we'll talk to you guys later. Wave goodbye, Dimitri.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.